is that the most extreme, I've been watching this now for the last year, that the most extreme predictions are the ones that are becoming mainstream. And I'm not the only one who has noticed this. My next guest is David Nevin. He is a science columnist for Newsmax and the Times of Israel. He is doing his own little fight to try to bring some sanity back into this discussion. A couple of our articles that he wrote that I just think the information he brings to it just reframes this whole debate, reframes the whole discussion, and hopefully we can start getting some moderation brought back into the discussion of the science. He joins me now to talk about it. David, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, it's my pleasure, Danielle. I've been looking at your bio. You seem to be one of the there don't seem to be too many people in Alberta like you. It's a great pleasure to have a few words with you and your audience.
Well, give us a bit of your background as well. Like, are you a scientist or are you a science writer? Or are you both?
I'm not an expert, thank goodness for that. If I were, I would be giving you the same parables that you've been hearing for the last, since the 1910. We were all going to die back in 1910 when the planet passed through Halley's Comet's tail. Plenty of people committed suicide then, and, all the way back to Y2K, where people were digging bunkers on this side of the border. I don't know if you guys were doing it up there, but I've written four books on Earth science that were number one bestsellers in the seismology category for many dozens of months. And I write, I'm a science columnist for two world-class media outlets, so I do get a chance to share my words, and it's a great pleasure to speak to the people of Calgary.
Well, we keep getting told that it's only fringe scientists who question the prevailing view that is out there, that there's this 97% consensus. Tell me what you see going on in the scientific world. Like, I've had people on who have dismantled that assertion, so
that's absolute nonsense.
But why is it that there are so few scientists willing to speak up to provide the balance to the debate? What is happening out there?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you a simple one. How many biologists or geneticists do you know who would get on your show and say that there are two genders now?
Well, it's true, because you've got, you do have a politicization of a discussion of science, and once you've got that happening, nobody wants to step in it and have the political correctness police come after them.
And over the last five, we've assumed that the scientific method, holds sway. Over the last 500 years, they've never stopped burning witches or taking part in Jewish pogroms or chasing down people who caused droughts and blights and well poisonings. It's if God had wanted man to fly, he'd have given him wings. That was just a few decades ago. Every single blunder that science has made, every single fact that science has made that we realize now is correct, was preceded by at least a dozen horrific blunders. And this climate business is no different. We've seen the blunders. The world was going to come to an end in 89, then 99, then 2009. Now the latest one comes out. And it's always, we have 10 years left. Every 10 years, they revamp the 10-year predictions. And then before that, we had population bombs that fizzled and peak oils that never peaked and coming ice ages that never arrived. So this in-days nonsense is it seems to be ingrained in our genes. It's nothing new.
Although you've given me a good reason now for understanding why every 10 years the hysterical predictions come back is because you've got every 10 years a new generation coming of age who may not have heard the horror story, so now they've got to re-terrify that new generation coming up.
Yeah, and the tipping point expires, so they have to revamp the tipping point. There's a new tipping point.
Well, here's the worry that I have, and I'd like you to get a little bit into this, is that now we're at a point where people are going to start getting hurt. People are going to literally start dying as a result of the expedited time frame that they want to get us off of fossil fuels. You've got this one article that you sent me about the needless deaths that are happening in the United Kingdom. Can you tell us what's going on here?
Yeah, that gutsy paper in Montreal that published that, I have to really tip my hat to the Montreal paper, that the op-ed that you're referring to. 3,000 elderly Britons die every year and have been dying every year for several decades and are going to die this winter owing to what they call, their words, they're not my think tanks, they're liberal think tanks, one in Netherlands and the other in London, that have come to realize that there's a cold home issue in Britain. And these pensioners who are pinching pennies trying to pay for their natural gas to heat their homes are playing dangerous games with their health. And it turns out that every year, 3,000 British elderly British needlessly die because of exacerbation of health issues that wouldn't have happened had natural gas been plentiful and cheap. And, you know, there's no fracking in the United Kingdom, and they just a few days ago, that's why the op-ed came out, a few days ago, the very last well, they capped north of Liverpool, so there's no fracking in Britain anymore. So the price of natural gas has to go up because the scarcity will be increased, and maybe it won't be 3,000 British pensioners that die this year, maybe four. But all of that on the altar of this eco-extremism where, again, if a biologist or a geneticist is put on the spot and you ask him, you know, obviously there's XX and XY chromosomes, there's boys and girls, there's males and females, right? He will not answer you. And these people in Britain who are screaming for fracking, if you were to say, and I've been talking to them on, I've been talking to British presenters that have been emailing me that read the article in Ireland, and they're none too happy about it because it puts Britain in a bad light, but I've asked them flat out, well, you know, what about the 3,000 British that are dying every year? And they don't answer that.
Tell me a little bit more about that? Because we're obviously in a similar situation. We're heavily dependent on natural gas to heat our homes in our province. Everyone is talking about that, how in 10 years we've got to be over to wind and solar. I've watched the wind and solar generation capacity when we've got minus 30 degrees Celsius weather. It doesn't work. And so, and we've got carbon taxes now being laid on top as well. So we're going to, and we've got long stretches of minus 30 weather that happen in our part of the country. And so I'm kind of curious about this connection, this cold home public health crisis. Like what is actually happening? Are people developing the flu? Are they getting pneumonia? The pneumonia.
Yes. And I'm certain there's people in Canada dying too. You can bet on that. They're just not talking about it. There's people here in this, there's people all over the world that are dying. Older people that are on, you've been talking all morning long about fixed budgets. I was thinking, you made me nervous about my own finances. But
I'm nervous about mine now, too, as well, especially with our home heating and our electricity costs going up so much.
But Danielle, you look, it's worse than that. Forget whether you're going to freeze to death. The other op-ed I sent you, do you like eating? I mean, because 50% of the chromosomes in your body were created in an ammonia factory. They were cooked up. Natural gas is what produces the 500 billion tons of fertilizer that is produced in the world today. If it wasn't for the United States and Canada and our immense natural gas resources, which are converted into a fertilizer, which power the immense agricultural pistons of the United States and Canada, there would be a global hunger crisis. So,
Hold on, because when I first read this, it took me a bit to wrap my head around this. So I want to read what you've put here. Hold on, I got to take a pause. We're going to continue our discussion. Many of you are asking, who is this guy that you're talking to? This guy I'm talking to is David Nevin. He is the science columnist for Newsmax and Times of Israel. You can find his articles in both of these places. He wrote for the Montreal Jewish Magazine.com is one place. And he's also I think he's been in the Irish Examiner as well. So he is a science writer, as he mentioned. He gave you sort of his science credentials, and we're talking about how we can bring some sanity back into this discussion. Let's take a pause. We'll continue this when we return on 770 CHQR.
Even if your family doesn't ski or snowboard, if you want to have the best in winter fashion, you need to visit Ski Seller Snowboard. We don't sell knockoffs that don't last. We have the best mountain-tested brands like Burton, Spyder, Orage, Arc'teryx, Obermeyer, and Dakine. And right now, all of last season's clothing for men, ladies, and kids is up to 50% off, including winter jackets, pants, beanies, sweaters, fleece, and more. We even have hard-to-find sizes. Ride to SkiSellerSnowboard.com. Your family's comfort is our obsession.
Do you want to cash in with corporate tenants at your rental property? My name is Shaman Qureshi, and 10 years ago, I started Hope Street Management. Since then, we've set up thousands of executive and corporate rental connections, and we'd love to match some of our lucrative corporate tenants with your luxury rental property.
Visit hopestreet.ca for more info or get started with your free online rental evaluation. hopestreet.ca.
The holidays are a magical time that bring friends and families together, and they're always better with music. I'm Rune Bergman, music director of the Calgary Philharmonic Orchestra, and I invite you to join us this festive season. Our Jazzy Holiday Pops concert features brilliant Jens Lindemann and me on our trumpets. Then we deliver the holiday spirit to all four corners of Calgary with sounds of the season. Don't miss superstar Paul Brandt's Country Christmas and the return of the beloved Handel's Messiah. Get your tickets now at calgaryphil.com.
We all know what Black Friday means. With so many deals and so little time, it's tough to find the one you want. But what if you could get a deal on something tough? Like Canada's best-selling truck, the Ford F-150. Your Ford store has you covered. Right now, get over $12,000 in total value on select new 2019 F-150 models. But only for a limited time. Black Friday ends November 27th. Visit your local Ford store or Ford.ca.
As Calgarians, we connect with the Stampede for many reasons. For some, it's about the fun. For others, a first job. For over 2,500 volunteers, it's how they give back to their community. And for so many, it's how we connect to our community. Whether it's for agriculture or the arts, the history or the future, Calgary Stampede is a gathering place for those who want to celebrate the city we share. Sure, the CS is the brand of Calgary Stampede, but more often than not, it stands for community spirit.
For over 90 years, Canadian homeowners and professionals have chosen Steel to get the job done. Only at authorized dealers, you'll find Steel quality outdoor power equipment at affordable prices. With blowers starting at $199.95, chainsaws starting at only $259.95, now with a free Wood Pro kit. Fuel or battery products are available at over 1,000 Steel dealers across Canada, where it's easy to find expert advice, on-site service, and Canada's number one selling brand of gas-powered equipment. Find your dealer today at steel.ca.
TELUS Mobile Health Clinics give people living on the streets the medical care they need with the dignity they deserve.
Come on in. Let's get you checked out.
And TELUS Mobility for Good helps youth leaving foster care connect to the resources and support they need with a free phone and plan. Hello? Across Canada, TELUS is helping those who need it most. Because we're all connected for good. Learn more at telus.com/allconnectedforgood.
All right, and just to add some numbers to this, somebody sent me a article from Energy Live News. This is just in October, and it's talking about the crisis in Britain. And I'll see if we can come up with similar numbers here. But they look at the number of households that are already in energy debt ahead of winter. So this was in October. 3 million households are already in energy debt, meaning that they collectively owe $417 million pounds to their suppliers just before the year's coldest weather arrives. So around 12% of people are currently in debt to their energy supplier, with customers owing an average of £124 each. It's likely to worsen as energy demand ramps up to keep houses warm during winter. So these are numbers that we need to know, too. What is happening in Alberta? What's happening in Canada? How many people already going into the winter season are in energy debt? How many people are living in this kind of energy poverty? This has an impact, because if people are worried about the debt and they keep their houses too cool and they end up developing pneumonia, it leads to the same problem of early deaths. We need to be looking at ways to make sure that our fixed income seniors aren't having to make those kind of terrible choices. Promise you, I'm going to talk to Dan McTeague. He started up this new group where he's become the CEO of a new group looking at energy poverty. We're going to see if he can give us some stats next week. But this is what I worry about, guys, like, because this is not going to be solved by switching to wind and solar power. This is not going to be solved by getting there within 10 years. This is going to cause major hardship. Now, one other person, so this is the other point that I wanted to get to, is the history and chemistry lesson that we're going to get from my guest. I've got somebody here saying that mass starvation was predicted in the 19th century, until the Haber-Bosch process was developed to produce nitrogen fertilizer from natural gas. Well, this is a bit of a revelation for me. And my guest, David Nabham, has written about it. He's a science columnist for Newsmax and the Times of Israel. David, I just want you to walk us through that again, because I think we always, you know, we develop these great new life-saving and life-prolonging technologies, and then we probably forget about them and take them all for granted. So tell us, what was this Haber-Bosch process?
Well, the Irish Examiner, that came out yesterday. My other op-ed running right now is about that very topic. The Haber process changed the world. It saved the world, actually. As I mentioned before the break, half of you have 37 trillion cells in your body, and each of them have chromosomes, and you can't make chromosomes without fixed nitrogen. That's always been and fixed nitrogen is not very, it's kind of rare on this planet. We have plenty of nitrogen. The atmosphere is 78% nitrogen, but nitrogen doesn't like to bond with anything. And the only, that has always been since for billions of years, for, you know, life's, ceiling was the amount of fixed nitrogen that could be used to make, DNA, to create chromosomes, to make cells, to make biological mass. In 1910, the Haber process, he found a way to pull nitrogen out of the air, and then with methane, with natural gas. I'm not going to go into the nuts and bolts, but it's a pretty simple, insofar as saving the world's concerned. The fertilizer is only, the precursor of fertilizer is ammonia, and so with the Haber process creates ammonia. We have untold numbers of ammonia factories all over the planet pumping out tons and tons of ammonia. That is turned into 500 billion tons of fertilizer. This fertilizer is the foundation of all the agriculture on the planet. And without the Haber process, about 3.5 billion humans could live on planet Earth with the naturally occurring fixed nitrogens that we've made do with prior to, from time immemorial throughout history. The great divide was the 20th century, the early 20th century, when we crushed through that barrier. And there's 7.5 billion of us on the planet right now. Half of the people on Earth would have to go away if there were no natural gas extracted. If you want to cut fracking out, if you want to get rid of natural gas, that means you're going to get rid of fertilizer, and that means you're going to get rid of half of the people on the planet. So,
David, you have finally, may I just say, you have finally told me what I have been puzzling over for so long. I've been puzzling over what the attack on natural gas is all about, and I've been puzzling over why it is the extreme environmentalists say that the planet cannot support 7.5 billion people, and it's because if you get rid of natural gas, you're absolutely right. You have to reduce the population down to about 3.5 billion people. I never had that connection made for me before.
Well, that's the footnote. They're not going to tell you that to your face, but it's in the subscript.
So what do we do about this? Like, how do we change the? I mean, this is great information. This is what scientists should be talking about. This is what science writers should be writing about. Why is this so unknown? This is what schools should be teaching kids, and they're not teaching any of this. How do we get this kind of dialogue going so that people have a broader understanding of just how reliant we are from a humanity point of view, from a societal point of view, on natural gas and other fossil fuels?
Well, you don't want to ask me that question because you're going to bring out the worst in me, and I've been trying to be very polite, and I'm going to continue that way. You don't want my opinion on what I think of the people who are pushing this narrative. I don't think they're very good people, and as a matter of fact, I want to talk to the Canadians who bought it. I want to talk to good, decent, liberal especially. I don't need to talk to the conservatives. They already know. I'm curious, and I don't like preaching to the choir. My goal is to try to talk some common sense into good, decent Canadian liberals who will hear what I just said, who will hear how you just rebounded to it, and ask themselves, gee, why, maybe this path is not the proper way. Maybe we should have a better, a wider discussion on this before we turn the world upside down and pull the plug on our electric grid. Maybe we should ask who these people are that are coming up with all these ideas. In our country, we've got a 29-year-old ex-bartender in charge of our turn-the-world-upside-down progress. And in Sweden, they've got the sophomore that is still struggling with intermediate algebra but shrieking at her elders about everything that is wrong in the world. And that's what's wrong in the world. You have to ask yourself how that could be. Why would we be listening to AOC when she doesn't know anything? I don't know anything, and I've been looking at this for 25 years. And I'm quite able to tell you that I'm really not that smart. I'm just a halfway decent fellow who's made him, you know, apprise myself of the bare bones and nuts and bolts of these matters, because they're incredibly complicated. They're staggeringly complex problems that nobody has a handle on. And anybody that pulls out a crystal ball and tells you that the world's going to end, I got news for you. 300,000-year-old Homo sapiens living on 4.5 billion-year-old planet Earth ain't going anywhere.
David, thank you so much for bringing some common sense and some science to this discussion. I sure appreciate your time today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Danielle.
You got it. That's David Nabhan. He's a science columnist. You can find him at Newsmax and Times of Israel, among other places. So.